Welcome to Onc Live On Air. I'm your host today, Ashling Wehner. In today's episode, we had the pleasure of speaking with Yvonne Mowry, MD, PhD, about the Phase 2 SU2C SARC-032 trial investigating the addition of pembrolizumab to preoperative radiotherapy and surgery in patients with soft tissue sarcoma. In our exclusive interview, Dr. Mowry discussed unmet needs for patients with soft tissue sarcoma that prompted the initiation of this research, key efficacy and safety findings from the trial, and potential next steps for investigating the treatment regimen in this patient population. Thank you so much, Dr. Mowry, for taking the time to speak with us on an episode of Onc Live On Air. So just to start off with a bit of background, as soft tissue sarcoma remains a challenging-to-treat disease with limited treatment options, can you explain why the addition of pembrolizumab to preoperative radiotherapy was chosen to be evaluated in this population and how it might impact this unmet need?
Soft tissue sarcomas that are large or high grade have a high risk of developing distant metastatic disease. And so these are typically treated with a combination of radiation and surgery. And it's quite dependent on the institution as to whether or not patients get systemic therapy. And often chemotherapy, particularly doxorubicin-based or ifosfamide-based chemotherapy, is often used at many centers in an effort to reduce the risk of developing metastatic disease. But there's a lot of toxicity with those treatments and really has not been shown to have an overall survival benefit. And so our goal with this study was to try to use a less toxic systemic therapy to try to reduce the risk of developing distant metastatic disease, because really, that is where the mortality comes from for soft tissue sarcoma. Usually, we're able to achieve good control locally of the tumor with surgery and radiation. The control rates are above 90%. It's the spread of the disease usually to the lungs that is the problem. And so we had hypothesized that if we use anti-PD-1 therapy, the immunotherapy pembrolizumab, upfront with radiation therapy, and then additionally out back after surgery, that this might help to activate the immune system to have an anti-tumor effect that would eliminate micrometastatic disease before it really became clinically evident. So that was sort of the justification to proceed with the pembrolizumab. And it was also based on some preclinical studies that we had done in mouse models of undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcoma that had showed some promising results with the anti-PD-1 therapy and radiation combined. I'll just add one other thing, also a little other piece of background, which was that pembrolizumab, the anti-PD-1 therapy, has been studied in metastatic soft tissue sarcoma. And so SARC-28 was a prior clinical trial that was done looking at pembrolizumab in four different histologic subtypes of soft tissue sarcoma. And that had shown some promising results in two specific histologic subtypes. That's undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcoma and then dedifferentiated or pleomorphic liposarcoma. And that's really what informed for this trial the patients that we selected, which really limited enrollment just to those two different histologic subtypes. So we wanted to maximize, you know, the chances of benefiting these patients and built on the prior data from metastatic soft tissue sarcoma.
Could you walk through the trial design, methods, and patient population?
So as I mentioned, we did limit this to two histologic subtypes. So sarcoma is very complex with over 50 different histologic subtypes that each have a bit of a different behavior. But patients specifically had to have either grade 2 or grade 3 soft tissue sarcoma, specifically of subtype undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcoma or dedifferentiated or pleomorphic liposarcoma. In addition, patients had to have stage 3 disease, so it had to be a tumor greater than 5 centimeters without any evidence of distant metastatic disease. Initially, the trial was only open to adults, but once there was safety data that was available for pediatric patients, we were able to open this to enrollment to children age 12 and over at certain institutions as well. The study was also stratified by a grade, so patients had to have either grade 2 or grade 3, but that was also a stratification factor. So patients who are enrolled were randomized to either standard of care, preoperative radiation therapy followed by surgery, or the experimental arm, which had pembrolizumab, the anti-PD-1 therapy with pembrolizumab administered before, during, and after radiation, all before surgery, and then out back after surgery. So it was a total of up to 1 year of pembrolizumab with 3 cycles before surgery and up to 14 after surgery.
What efficacy results were reported from the trial?
So the primary endpoint for this trial was disease-free survival. And We did see indeed a statistically significant improvement in disease-free survival in the experimental arm that included pembrolizumab. So the two-year disease-free survival rate in the control arm was 52%, and in the experimental arm with pembrolizumab, it was 67%. So that's a 15% absolute improvement in disease-free survival at 2 years. The other way that that we look at this is by a hazard ratio, which the hazard ratio was 0.61. The primary endpoint of disease-free survival, this was powered as a one-sided test. So we had hypothesized that the control arm would have approximately a 50% disease-free survival at 2 years, and we hit pretty much there at 52%. So with our sample size, we were looking to get 126 patients that were evaluable, and that gave us 80% power to detect a two-year disease-free survival difference of 50% versus 72% with a one-sided 0.05 level of significance.
What should be known about the safety profile of pembrolizumab in this setting, and what was seen in terms of serious adverse effects in particular?
There were more side effects or more toxicity observed in the pembrolizumab arm. Fortunately, there were no grade 5 adverse events, so no deaths related to treatment. One of the things that we were particularly keen to observe was whether there was going to be any difference in wound complications, so kind of major surgical complications after having preoperative immune therapy with radiation. And those rates were very similar between the control arm and the experimental arm. So there were 11 patients in the experimental group and 11 patients in the control group that had some major surgical complications. So very similar. It was 15.7 versus 16.4%. But when we look overall, not just at major surgical complications, but any grade 3 or grade 4 adverse events, those were more common in the experimental arm. So the rate was 56% in the experimental arm versus 31% in the control arm. Now, fortunately, these were generally self-limited. These toxicities were less severe than what you'll typically see with chemotherapy. But the most common side effect in both the control and experimental arms was dermatitis from the radiation, so skin irritation, which was a little bit higher, 50% in the experimental group versus 39% in the control group. But the other things that were kind of more common in the experimental group were fatigue, as well as nausea. And there were a little bit higher risk of anemia. But we didn't see the kind of effects on the blood counts that are really the major one of the major issues with chemotherapy. And most of these side effects were very limited in terms of time and resolved.
What are the next steps for optimizing this therapy in this context? And how do you foresee incorporating it into clinical practice in the future?
I actually recently gave a talk at NRG and found out that even before the publication had come out, just based on ASCO presentation in June, that many medical oncologists had started incorporating this into their practice, particularly at places where chemotherapy is not commonly used. So they, for patients that they deem to be at higher risk, specifically grade 3 is where we saw greater effect size. I think that grade 3 disease was really what was driving the improvement in disease-free survival that we saw. So this is really where it's being incorporated as for grade 3 undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcoma or dedifferentiated pleomorphic liposarcoma. Adding pembrolizumab in the upfront setting and then also after surgery. But I think that the next steps for optimization really are another key point. Since many institutions use chemotherapy, there's been a lot of discussion, particularly in Europe, about having another clinical trial that would include immunotherapy and chemotherapy. And, we don't know if the chemotherapy by its immunosuppressive effects would actually counteract the immune therapy or some chemotherapies, including those used for soft tissue sarcoma, have been shown to cause immunogenic cell death. So perhaps there would be a cooperative effect or even synergistic effect. But that really will need to be experimentally tested because we can't say from this trial whether the pembrolizumab or other anti-PD-1 therapy would improve or worsen the outcomes with chemotherapy. The other trial design that's under consideration is considering dual immune checkpoint blockade. So pembrolizumab just targets PD-1, but there have been some early studies looking at anti-PD-1 therapy with anti-CTLA-4 therapy. And so that is another combination that's under consideration for a future randomized trial.
Could you elaborate on some of the limitations of this research and some of the findings of the correlative studies that were done here?
Yeah, so I think that the biggest limitation really is relatively limited follow-up at this time. And so, the overall survival, we are not seeing any statistically significant difference at this time. There is some separation of the curves that numerically favor the experimental arm, but I think it's really too soon to tell. So that's going to just require additional follow-up. And additionally, the study was powered for disease-free survival and not for overall survival. So we may just be underpowered to look at that. Other limitations are that this trial is still relatively small. For soft tissue sarcoma, it's big, especially being limited to just two histologic subtypes. But that really does limit our power for being able to look at different subgroups. For example, we're underpowered to be able to say the effect in undifferentiated pleomorphic sarcoma versus liposarcoma, or the effect based on grade two or grade three. We can look at the results and say, look, grade three is really where the curves are separating. The study was not powered to be able to look at those kinds of subgroup analyses. And similarly, to be able to look at some of the secondary endpoints like distant disease-free survival or overall survival, like I already mentioned. So I think that's some of the major limitations. We also really cannot comment on radiation dose fractionation. So these patients receive standard dose fractionation of 50 gray and 25 fractions over 5 weeks. And there's some institutions that use shorter radiation treatment course with a larger dose of radiation. And we had just a few patients who, due to the COVID pandemic, received larger dose per fraction to try to shorten their treatment in the midst of the pandemic. But it was too few patients to be able to give any sort of commentary on whether a higher radiation dose per fraction would lead to a better interaction with the immune therapy as compared to the 5 week treatment that was performed. And then, I think the final, we talked a bit about the chemotherapy and how many places, many institutions do standardly use chemotherapy for this patient population. We don't have enough data to say whether or not pembrolizumab would be additive or synergistic at all with chemotherapy since that was not assessed. One other thing is that some places will give the radiation therapy after surgery. And this was a preoperative radiation therapy study. And we really, did that because we wanted to have tumor antigens present at the time that we were giving radiation. So the radiation, hopefully leading to kind of more of an immune reaction. So giving the preoperative radiation therapy in sarcoma, we can do a lower dose, but it also scientifically had rationale for doing that up front. But many institutions, like for example, Memorial Sloan Kettering primarily does postoperative radiation therapy, and we can't comment on how pembrolizumab would play into things with either just doing it adjuvantly or doing preoperative in the absence of preoperative radiation therapy. One other thing I'll comment on is the correlative studies that I think are really essential from this study. So we did collect blood throughout the study. We also had tissue from initial diagnosis, and then we had tissue from the time of surgery. And we've been doing a lot of assays on these. So in particular, I think one of the things that's most exciting has been work out of Everett Modine's lab at Stanford that has been looking at circulating tumor DNA for these patients. And unlike a lot of other cancers that tend to have a lot of common mutations that we're able to track with kind of off-the-shelf commercial circulating tumor DNA assays, these patients have very diverse mutational profiles. And so what Dr. Modine's lab has done is actually perform whole exome sequencing, so sequencing of the DNA of these patients on their pre-treatment biopsy, and then developed a customized panel to be able to track circulating tumor DNA for each individual patient. And with that, with these customized assays, we've been able to detect a baseline circulating tumor DNA in about 80% of patients. And we've seen that baseline circulating tumor DNA, as well as patients who still have detectable postoperative circulating tumor DNA, they have worse outcomes. And this is really interesting because this may be a way in the future to better select patients who are most likely to benefit from treatments, whether that's immune therapy or chemotherapy. And we know that some patients were probably overtreating, whereas other patients were undertreating. So having biomarkers like this that may help us to really select patients who are most likely to benefit, and that it's kind of makes more sense to put them at risk for increased toxicity will be very helpful. So that's one thing I'm very excited about. One of the other correlative assays that we've been doing has been based on actually looking at the gene expression profile of these tumors and trying to categorize them into different sarcoma immune classes, which had been studied previously and had been shown in the metastatic setting to correlate with response to pembrolizumab. And so this is something else that we're trying to look at as to whether or not there's some correlation and outcomes with sarcoma immune class. even when trials are negative, we can often learn so much from the correlative assays. And I think here we're very lucky. We had a positive trial, seeing a significant benefit to patients. And then we're learning things that I think will benefit patients, even who aren't getting pembrolizumab, you know, in the future, trying to parse out which patients really benefit from having systemic therapy added onto the radiation and surgery.
That's all we have for today. Thank you for listening to this episode of OncLive On Air. Check back on Mondays and Thursdays for exclusive interviews with leading experts in the oncology field. For more updates in oncology, be sure to visit www.onclive.com and sign up for our e-newsletters. OncLive is also on social media. On X, follow us at OncLive. On Facebook, like us at OncLive, and follow our OncLive page on LinkedIn. If you liked today's episode of OncLive On Air, please consider subscribing to our podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and many of your other favorite podcast platforms so you get a notification every time a new episode is posted. While you're there, please take a moment to rate us. Thanks again for listening to OncLive On Air.